We hear a lot of perspectives on the Mankind podcast. Inclusion of a guest is not an endorsement of their views, and the opinions expressed here do not always represent the mission or values of the Mankind Project USA.
Looks like the rain has gone.
Hey, everybody, it's Boysen Hodgson. Welcome back to the Mankind Podcast, the podcast where we are proving week on week that there is indeed more than one way to be a man. Today is a different kind of conversation. It's a type of conversation that I've never done, so I'll try and moderate it well. I have three guests today. This started out because of an outreach from a filmmaker, a creative named Ian Chi, who reached out to the Mankind Project because he was working on a short film called I Do, and we'll talk more about I Do. And when Ian and I got talking, we kind of said, hey, let's get a couple more guys into this who worked on the I Do film. So we also have David Bonnet and John Bregel with us today. So first of all, guys, say hello, and I want you to say your name so that we can start getting voice patterning in, and we'll have to identify ourselves as we speak today. So Ian, first you, say hey.
How's it going? This is Ian Chi, the creative that reached out to Boysen.
And David, say hello.
Hello, this is David Bonnet, one of the producers on I Do.
And John Bregel.
What's up? This is John Bregel. I was the director for I Do.
Beautiful. So I'm going to tell you a little bit more about each of these three guys. Ian Chi is the founder and executive producer of Nourish Creative, a story design studio dedicated to weaving stories that nurture and empower the human spirit. Previously, he was the creative force behind Jubilee Media. Ian's work has gathered over a billion views and millions of subscribers. As a chief creative of mindset at Dive Studios, he spotlighted the humanity of artists like Summer Walker, Keshi, Slothai, and more. With a portfolio boasting Fortune 100 clients like NASA and Apple, Ian combines a passion for seeking wisdom, artistry, and love of substantive entertainment to leave a lasting imprint on the media landscape. I want you to listen for some similarities in these three bios as I'm reading, because we're going to be talking a lot about the creative life today and what it takes to be creative in this era. Oh, and I'm also going to point out, Ian, how old are you?
I am 32 years old.
32. So 32, 35, 35, and I'm 52. So we're going to have some generational conversation today. David Bonnet Jr. is a producer and location manager for feature films, television, and commercials. David's journey commenced as an ardent cinephile, captivated by the profound power of storytelling, its emotional resonance, and the enchanting process it encompasses. David started in physical production and location management, where he was a scout and a manager for studios like Netflix, Amazon, Apple, Warner Brothers, Paramount, and HBO. The alignment of his love for travel, for film, exploration, and human interaction has sculpted his ability to transform real-world environments into cinematic tapestries. David's worldly experience, juxtaposed with his prowess of the filmmaking process, has led him to the documentary world, where he strives to build relationships and tell stories that are truly impactful, far beyond what any scripted content can provide. Just going to say, go look at David's IMDb page as a list of examples of some of the things he's been with. And John Bregel is a cinematographer and the visionary founder of Variable, a production company turned wellness community for filmmakers. Wellness community for filmmakers. With a portfolio boasting collaborations with industry giants like Nike, Audi, and National Geographic, John has garnered numerous accolades, including 13 Vimeo staff picks and awards from Cannes, Lion, and AICP. While John had a taste of worldly success in advertising and the resulting burnout, his true calling emerged over time to foster both creative brilliance and personal well-being in the filmmaking community. Now leading with a mission that aligns closer to his values, John continues to be a touchstone for creativity, innovation and human connection in the industry. So big picture today, we're going to be talking about impactful emotional filmmaking. We're going to be talking about grief. We're going to be talking about reinventing yourself. So these are three millennial guys who all have reinvention stories that have led them to more purposeful and passionate lives as creatives. We're going to start with I Do, which is how I came to hear about Ian Chi. And I think probably I'm going to go to you first, John, as the director for I Do. Tell me about this story, how it kind of came into being.
Sure. Well, first off, Boysen, that was an epic introduction. So thank you for that.
Yeah, you're welcome.
So I Do, I feel like it's probably been like 10 years in the making, because Jim is a family friend. He's someone that goes to the same church that my parents go to. And when his wife, Julie, was going through the final phase of her life, my father stepped in and was by Jim's side through a lot of that process. It's just someone to talk to and find solace with, and just as a friend, really. And so I've been familiar with Jim's story, Jim and Julie's story, for 10 years. And when I initially met Jim, I found he had a way of talking about loss and love and life that really stuck with me. I've always been really drawn towards people that have a particular cadence when they speak, have a way of talking about things that just really sticks with you. I think that's been something in like any type of real person, real people work that I look towards, because I know there's a gravity to the way that people speak. And he had that impact on me. And so I wanted to make his film for almost 10 years now. And then it just never happened. And the right moment never happened. And then it was about a year ago or so, my wife and I were going through infertility treatments. And it was this new type of pain that I was experiencing, because I had this dream of having my own kids my whole life. And then in front of me, it was all kind of, you know, all the signs were not looking good, and continues to be a challenge to this day. But the pain of that moment, in those moments earlier on, had me isolating and pulling away from my wife, and it was just difficult emotional territory for me to navigate. And so I spent a lot of time with my therapist trying to understand it. And then ultimately this idea of making a film to kind of work through some of those feelings started coming to mind. I was, you know, how can I process this? How can I make sense of this? Because creativity and making films has always been kind of like journaling on steroids for me. It's always been a way for me to kind of make sense of what I'm going through. And so this was the perfect reason. And then Jim came to mind as the subject that I could potentially explore some of these feelings with and through. And so I called him, we got lunch and started talking about the possibility of making his film. Because again, I felt like I was in the right space, and he was also, happy to sort of help guide me through the process. Although he didn't even know necessarily that the specifics of what I was going through at the time, he was just very willing to answer my questions and provide some understanding. And through his lens of loss, which I think that's the common thread that we'll get to with, is just loss and grieving and finding meaning in grief as well. And so basically, David and I set out to film. I think we filmed for what, it was like 3.5 days with Jim. I never really knew exactly what the plan was, like what the end result of the film was going to be the whole time. But it was just like a journey, you know, it was like a journey of self-discovery, of learning. And then the film kind of came together as a result of that. So, yeah. Thank you.
So let's share the beginning of the film so that you can get a little taste of the ambiance, what it sounds like, what it feels like.
That's a tough one to try to describe what the love was or is I guess when you're really deeply in love, you don't bother trying to define it. You just enjoy it. You just if you're going to know me, you would have to know Julie. I knew.
And since you brought David in, I'll talk about the film. So link in the show notes to the film. I do. It's going to be coming out, premiering at the beginning of October. I'll share that with you all. So, David, talk about your perspective being on the scene. So you are the creative place. You're the place guy in my head. Talk more about that and how it applies in this. I do.
Well, basically, I was, the way that it all came about, John and I kind of linked up, and I was really just a fan of a lot of his work, and the next project he wanted to do, I was kind of all on board for. And I just really thought it was special, even though we didn't clearly know what the film was even going to be. Jim's story and the way he spoke about it was just really poignant. I thought it was really important to kind of discuss that and get that on film and put that out there.
Thank you. And then where did Ian? Now it's your turn. How did you show up in this? Because these two had a relationship. How did the three of you get together in this?
Well, my personal connection and introduction to I Do was after it was shot and edited, but John approached me looking for collaborators when it came to finding partners, get it seen by the right folks. I also have some experience with digital media, growing a YouTube channel and just getting a following, kind of that kind of stuff. But before that, John and I connected on such a similar wavelength from our own burnout experiences, both being creatives and kind of losing ourselves. And I think that was the context behind which anything that John was making, I was automatically interested in, because it was, I knew it'd be coming from a pure place. And we just shared a lot of similarities. But when I watched the film, what I appreciated about it was usually the word grief is associated with heaviness and darkness. And there is no denying of that in the film. But I thought it was beautiful how there was a feeling of transcendent love and light through the theme of grief. Even though maybe that wasn't the intention going into it, as John and David were exploring and Jim was being authentic about his reflections, something came out that you couldn't quite put a label on it during the process, but I think what came out on the other side was really beautiful. And the way the three of us came together, I think we've each walked our own paths, not quite being authentic to our core innermost values and desires, and getting a taste of what that feels like and kind of realizing that we want to pivot and just focus on much more meaningful work that explores new parts of ourselves and serves other people. And so when this came along, it was a great opportunity for the three of us to collaborate together. And I met David through this project, which I'm very grateful for. And we keep meeting other great friends through the project and reaching out to people and sharing about it. And even yourself, Boyson, somehow just when you're doing something that's a little bit more substantive and mission driven, it feels like it's a gift that keeps on giving. New friends, new collaborators, new good humans. So it's nice to see it keep going like this, and hopefully people who are hearing about it resonate as well.
Thank you. Yeah, very well said. I accidentally did that in exactly the right order, didn't I, with how I introduced the film. Cool. So here's what I want to say about the film. Go watch it. And what I will underline about what Ian just said is that even though this short film is talking about something that is extraordinarily difficult, it's about Jim's loss of his partner, his wife, to breast cancer, it has a lot, it has light in it. The way it is filmed, the way it was shot, the way the location, the way the scenes are composed, it is constantly shining a light on a real human, emotional, authentic experience in a way that just makes it so, it's profound to watch. And yeah, so go watch the film. Something that I heard in what you said, John, was about film as and creative process as a way to kind of bring clarity to your own emotional struggles and things that are going on. And in all three of your bios, I read that in. So talk about the creative process and self-expression a little bit more. Is that a good question?
Yeah, I think it's a good question. I mean, I'll speak for myself because it's hard to generalize that question for me. But, you know, I got into film not to make Hollywood films. Like, I got into film because I just like to make things. You know, it was never about some type of goal. It was just making things, usually with my friends. And how that's evolved over the years is I've had to find the meaning, a deeper meaning in that process, because that was fun for a while. Like, that was kind of the point for a while was to make great work with my friends. And I did that. You know, I built a production company in New York City with my friends, and we made some great work and it was successful. But the work and what we were doing wasn't always aligned with my core values. Like, I was trying to appease too many people in the business. And, you know, there was an overhead and that got really stressful. But when I left the business, I had to come really back and to discover who I was and what are my values and what are the boundaries that have to be in place for me to actually enjoy my life. And through this sort of self-discovery process, the last 5 years or so, my creative process has evolved significantly to now, where anything that I do in my own time, it has to provide some type of transformation or insight or something that's gonna positively impact me as a human. Because at the end of the day, the film of the project's gonna come out and everybody might hate it. It might get zero views, it might get a billion views, but the process of making a film takes so much time that if it's not actually worth it for me on a personal transformational level, then I just personally don't see the value in doing it for personal work. So that's sort of why my process is the way it is.
Thank you. Yeah, very well said. David, as soon as John started talking, I remembered our first conversation and resonate. Golden handcuffs were the words that you used when we had this conversation. So with what John is saying, how does that resonate for you? And what the hell are golden handcuffs?
So my background is between John and Ian is a little different. And I kind of came up in like the studio system. You know, I kind of started out as a PA. But what originally got me there was I had always had a fascination with stories in general. Like, that was always something in school that I always excelled at, whether it was history or, you know, literature class. When I went to college, I was actually pre-dental for a semester. And then I just wasn't sitting right with me. And I was like, well, you know, I'm already half a year in. What am I going to do? And I had always loved movies. I didn't know it was something you could even make a career out of. But I decided to become a literature major, and it was a focus in media and film. And that was one way I could kind of like cure that appetite. Unfortunately, the school I went to, University of Maryland, they didn't have any physical production. So I was always trying to like figure out ways I could get into it. And I was joining clubs or anything like that. But out of college, I landed, it was a couple years out of college. It was still kind of a search, even how to get your foot in the door. it was a struggle for me for a few years. But then I landed a job as a PA on an independent film, and I was really curious. I was always curious of the process. And it kind of snowballed, and I found myself, you know, in location management. And we kind of, that job, you know, we kind of handle anything that's outside of the studio backlot and their control. So anything outside of that falls in our jurisdiction, whether it's a permitting, scouting locations, all the logistical stuff. But as my career went on, I kind of found myself getting further and further away of why I wanted to even be in the business and be creative. And, you know, coming along with that, you know, you get paid really well. And I'm very appreciative for all of that. And unfortunately, a lot of the time you're working, you can work on these shows for like 9 to 10 months a year if you're really lucky. And they take up a lot of time. You're on call, especially in my department. Like, you're getting calls over the weekend, emails. It's nonstop. And that's including, you know, 80-hour weeks, 100-hour weeks. So I was there's always a step of like existentialism. And I took a job back here last year after I moved back from LA, and that ended, and I kind of connected with John on this project, and it was something I really wanted to do, especially getting back to that storytelling part of what I really connected, especially with Jim's story. I didn't really have an idea exactly what it was, but just the whole process and kind of getting back to like the minimalist form of filmmaking where you don't need all these lights and all these trucks and all this stuff. You kind of, John said he wanted to shoot something that was kind of contained and in a house. And that's what we set out to do. And we did it. And it's phenomenal, in my opinion. And yeah, that's just kind of getting stuck with those golden handcuffs is hard to break away from because it's your bread and butter, you know? But going back to myself, I kind of have to peel that back and go to what my soul's dragging me towards. I guess there's like a thread that brings me back to that stuff.
Thank you. Soul, what the soul wants, what the soul brings you back to. I'm reminded of when I was thinking about this interview, the old Joseph Campbell follow your bliss idea involved in the hero's journey and kind of epic stuff. And reading your bios and talking to the three of you, I come back to that. And bliss doesn't mean easy. Bliss doesn't mean pleasure. Bliss doesn't mean, yeah, it means actually following something that resonates, as you said, in your soul. And then as you said, John, something that has to be transformational for you. Like, if it doesn't have that aspect of transformational change, then why do it? Yeah. So Ian, now let's go to you. So as soon as you and I started talking, the next thing that you brought forward was your TEDx talk, which is stop trying to change yourself. So in line with the two other stories that we've already heard, let's hear a little bit more about your story of, yeah, kind of the brief version of the TEDx and your transformation story.
Yeah, I think it seems, you know, I had my rite of passage of this burnout the past 2, 3, 4 years. But long story short, I think since a young age, I've wanted to change the world, have a massive impact, you know, and do just great things with my life. And I'm also a pastor's kid. And so I set out with this mission to really do good for the world. And I think what started out as pure joy, kind of as what John said, making films with friends in middle school, as I got older, especially as I graduated college, I think I started to get more caught up in the idea of being successful more than the joy of it. And, you know, it's a very subconscious thing. It's not like I consciously was trying to just get views and things like that. But, you know, it was just this ambition to be as big as I could be and change the world. And got some little badges of honor along the way. You know, the first like million view video at Jubilee, it's like a hit of adrenaline. But then over time, I think with that certain image of success becomes this trap of having to keep up that image. And now all my actions were kind of driven by wanting to look good in front of others versus doing what I actually wanted. And over time, when I found myself, you know, not really pursuing my joy and instead trying to just please others, I think I just ran out of energy. It you know, it's not a deep well of energy there. It's you have to keep putting up this act, if you will. Mm-hmm. So at a certain point, I think I just felt like a shell of a person with, I just literally didn't have any energy to go on. I just felt really dead inside. And even so, I had this compulsive need to be productive and to still keep achieving because I'd been doing that for so long. But eventually it got to a point where I had to really face myself after enough pain and just kind of ask myself, why do I keep doing this? Like, why do I keep compulsively going after these things and trying to achieve things? And that's when I decided to play around with this. Just do a lot of internal soul searching, like take some time for myself.
Yeah.
But especially my whole life, I realized that in trying to change the world and do good, it was actually kind of this escape from me facing my own feelings. And my trying to change the world was really, I think, a projection of my desire to look within myself and see what was there. Or it was me not seeing what was there, rather.
Yeah.
And when I examined all my actions of why I was trying to change the world and you know, doing all these other things to try to learn how to love myself. I've been spiritually inclined from a young age. So I was like trying to find out, like, all these people say I should love myself, but how do I do that? I can't figure it out. And I like read all these books and I did therapy. I traveled, couldn't figure it out. Until finally, I think I sat down, and when I came to a point of desperation with no more answers, I think, you know, God or higher spirit, you know, whatever word you want to use, kind of knocked on my door and said, Ian, what, there's something you've been doing over and over that just has not been getting you results. And I realized among all the things I had tried to change the world to make myself better was I was always trying to essentially run away from my own feelings and just try to change, get rid of the negative feelings and just go towards the good ones and try to change what was in myself versus facing what was there. So that was that TEDx talk. I think it's been a year and a half ago, was the first moment of my beginning to really look inside and see what was in me and accept myself as is without any change, without needing to achieve anything, without needing to, you know, look good or fix myself and really try to do, I guess, what Carl Jung says, shadow work. Yeah. And try and just love all of myself versus just trying to become this better version all the time. And it's been a journey. It's ongoing. There's still, of course, very hard days where I judge myself a lot, but I'm also trying to love that part of myself that judges me, like, hey, I see you. I see you wanting to, you know, always get better and feeling unworthy, and it's okay. I see you, you know. Yeah, it's a journey of expansion, I suppose, of consciousness.
What listeners, you can't see is the head nods in the room. And I'm going to throw this question out for any of you who want to answer. So Mankind Project, Mankind Podcast, we're a men's organization. We're a peer support organization. We do transformation work with men. 35, 35, 32 years old. What do you think's different out there for men in our culture today? Like, you guys all have stories of wanting to reconnect with your soul and your purpose and wanting to understand how to love yourselves and wanting to actually confront feelings that you're experiencing. Do you think culture is different? What do you project on guys who are older than you, and what do you see as has changed in our culture for younger men?
I'll just say I haven't experienced being part of other generations, obviously, but when I, like, especially in the past year and a half, 2 years of me trying to just dive in and figure more things out within myself, I just notice more and more how much distraction there is in the world and in society at large. It's just incredible how much distraction there is. And I don't think there's been a time in history when there has been this much noise, like media, social media, news, like just so much that has hooks on it to reel you in versus things that are genuinely, you know, nurturing of one's true self. So I don't know. I think, you know, I'd be curious to see if there's, you know, some raw data about this, but I think we live in a time for millennials and Gen Z when there's more noise and distraction than ever, in my opinion. And amidst that, I think there's a deeper need for conscious consumption, digital hygiene, connecting with people that kind of hold you to your higher values, as we've been talking about, and community. And just the other day, I was talking with a good friend who mentioned that the more that a society advances, the more lonely people become, the more separated they become. We don't have these things called tribes anymore. Everyone's in their own house or alone. You know, countries like South Korea, Japan, people aren't even getting married. And so it's, we have plenty of technology, but we sorely lack soul-to-soul connection, I think. And I think that is an increasing trend as time goes by that deserves to be looked at very closely.
Thanks, Ian. Other thoughts about that? What's different for younger guys?
I'll share a thought that I just had the other day, actually, when I was going through the final edit of the film, making some like little tweaks, was I was just noticing how, you know, Jim, he's looking through photo books, which we don't have anymore. And those used to be kind of sacred items of the home that didn't go outside of the home, and only people that were invited inside the home and offered the opportunity to look at this person's life. You know, this was a thing that our generation doesn't fully understand. We were like the last generation that maybe had them, but now everything is online and we're only sharing the best moments of our lives online. And I think to me, it creates this comparison culture where we lose the ability to be grateful for what we have, which is devastating. And so always thinking, oh, I don't have enough, they have more, I need to have that, and just staying on this hamster wheel or rat race or whatever way you want to look at it, to always feel like we need more than we have, instead of the opposite, which is just being grateful for the fact that I have a roof over my head. You know, I have a wife, you know, that's amazing. I have a family. Like, these are all incredible things. But then when we're constantly bombarded with the imagery on social media of everyone's best moments, again, I think it just makes us feel unappreciative, ungrateful. And that's, I can't think of a better word than devastating, but yeah.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you, John. David, do you have thoughts about that?
You know, they kind of both hit it, the nail on the head with that. I was thinking to myself as well, there is just so much noise out there. It's almost like a paradox of choice with, you know, what you're drawn to or what you're into, but it could be a good thing also. But I think you really have to dig through a lot now in order to connect with something, and that can be overwhelming and exhausting in itself. So I just think as things change, and obviously as society moves on, that you'll just really have to put in that work to identify and hold on to the things you're really attracted to or enjoy. But yeah, I think there is a ton of noise. I mean, just between, you know, social media and then all the content that's on TV now. There's you'll never make it through everything ever, which is like daunting, but it's, I don't know, it's an interesting time for sure.
Somehow that's almost the point, right? Is that there's so much you can never make it through. You'll never make it through anything, but we can keep burning the hours to avoid right. thinking or feeling the big stuff that is actually confronting us, or the big choices that we need to make.
Totally.
A great word I heard that is it, like sedation. Like I feel like that word is very fitting. Like there's just so much sedation, at least in my own journey. When I reflect back to, there's just like so much, there's so much available to help you run away, you know, so right. easily. Yeah.
Right. So I'm going to bring it into the story just because it's part of your TEDx also, but for you guys as millennial guys, is there anything that you see in your cohort, anything that you see among millennials that points to, well, I was coming in as framing this around addiction, right? So I know, Ian, you have some story about addiction in your history, and that's something that's true for me, and something that I see a lot in men's work is guys living through addictive tendencies. And that doesn't just have to be about alcohol, right? Or it doesn't have to be about drugs, but, you know, social media as the dopamine hit addictor, work as an addictive thing, like obsessions with getting new with stuff, right? Obsessions with the next car, the next shoe, the next phone, the next watch, the next whatever. How do you see your own generation? And is there any either praise that you want to give to guys who you know, or advice that you'd like to give to guys that you know around this oversaturation in our culture?
I don't know if this is a direct answer to that, but what I feel about our generation is that we might be the last folks who experienced a childhood without the internet and got a taste of quote unquote normality, whatever that means. And then we kind of got hit with the tsunami of social media and things like this. So there's this kind of core that I think we kind of know what it feels like to go out in the streets and play and have this community. So I don't know if this is advice per se, but I think there is a somewhat of a, I don't know if it's responsibility or a calling, that I think we get to really bring that back and kind of provide some guidance for Gen Z, Gen Alpha too, because I'm looking at, you know, kids that are younger than me, college kids, Gen Z, and they were completely born into this yeah. giant tsunami. And I see so much pain and confusion, but I also see genius. Like it's like the spectrum is widening, because there's so much more interconnection. If you're conscious with it, you can find great things, like David said, but if it's unconscious, you kind of get swept away. And so I guess if I had any encouragement, would be, regardless of what generation, to practice that intentional usage of technology, social media, everything that's out there, and to be able to create spaces where there's real human physical connection. And John and I have talked about this. I think a long-term goal probably for both of us is to either find or create ourselves like living communities where you're actually creating physical in person, that tribe feeling that has been lost. And I think there's going to be a lot more of that in the next couple of years, which is exciting.
Thank you, Ian. Yes, David?
I was just thinking that, you know, like the spectrum of things when it comes to, you know, whether it's a hobby or an addiction or something like that, it's so broad, and just to like finding the balance in there is something that could be really beneficial. Like we've been saying, you can get buried with a lot of things, and you know, I don't know. Like, that's the social media aspect of everything is just, it's really interesting, and it can go really deep. But I think, I don't know. I'm trying to wrap my mind around that. I'm kind of stumped on that one though.
Thank you. John's looking very pensive. Thoughts?
I'm just thinking where to go. I feel like a lot of times there's a tendency to put the blame on the younger generations. Like, I do this Friday morning men's group every week for the last like 3.5 years. And it's like 25 guys, and they're all like, you know, 50s to like 80. And
yeah.
I'm the youngest guy in the group. And there's been various times where, you know, guys are like putting blame on their kids and, you know, being on their phones too much. Why won't they this or that or whatever? And I guess I'm in a position where I see it. It's our responsibility. You know, we're the ones that, like Ian said, we're like the last generation to have experienced, you know, to have that perspective of a world without technology. And I think there's a tremendous amount of value in that sort of free-spirited, kind of safer, playful way of growing up, which I'm so grateful to have had. And so I think that the responsibility is on us now, as we're having kids, to know ourselves, to know our values, to educate our kids, whether that's through, you know, meditation, mindful practices, educating them on the importance of knowing their core values from a young age, and really stepping up and playing roles in the younger generation's lives where we're more proactive as mentors. And because the education system hasn't evolved to that degree yet. I know there's some, you know, schools, very few, that do like mindfulness practices and things of that nature. But I think universally, I would love to see a world where there's more life skills imparted earlier on, so kids have an opportunity to really learn who they are and get in touch with themselves at a younger age, so they're not just completely devoured by the onslaught of technology, which will just become more and more and more. So in many ways, I guess my point is the responsibility is on us. And that's a great responsibility. And it's increasingly harder and harder as we continue to get bombarded with more and more technology. So I think, again, like, we're grateful, I'll speak for myself, grateful to have had that kind of like burnout moment to wake me up a little bit. But as you mentioned, Boysen, it's not that the work gets easier by any means. It actually becomes more work because you have to work in different ways to make an impact. And it's not like life is easier, like I'm sitting on some mountaintop by any means. It's just the work is more meaningful in general. But I don't know if that answers your question, but that's all I got to say.
Yeah, it starts to get at it. And I didn't know that you mentioned being in a men's group. I didn't know you were in a men's group. That's cool. And there's the thread that I'll pull from both, from everything that's been said here, is for older generations, there may have been something that you were born into that felt tribal or that felt like community, right? That was just kind of taken for granted through church life or through geography, that place was an important determiner of a lot of things for a lot of people. You were born in it and you stayed there and you did what your dad did, and that was it. And now we have the awesome, as you said, responsibility of having to recreate communities together where we determine our values and where we set limits on our, for ourselves, on ourselves. What do you guys think about the kind of jumping slightly sideways? We've had a macho culture. We've had the culture of the rugged individualist. We've had the cowboy culture in the United States. How do you see changes maybe in, even in the film industry or in things? I've had some conversations with other people in industry that kind of indicates to me that we're kind of growing out a little bit of some of the old stereotypes and tropes about men and independence and going it alone and all that stuff. Does that resonate? Do you see anything out there that indicates that?
I can't point to specific examples off the top of my head, but I do feel like when I'm at colleges, for example, like doing college engagements and stuff, like, you know, if you're talking about doing therapy now, it's kind of cool. Whereas like it was taboo maybe like 15, 20 years ago. There's like also just much more talk of like wellness, mindfulness, self-love. And so the fact that it's kind of entered the mainstream and people are realizing the importance of that is pretty awesome. And I think hopefully that just continues to grow. Yeah, I'm curious what even younger folks might say about what masculinity means to them now. But I do think there's that change. I also noticed it in Korea, where it's like there's a lot, I don't know what the word to describe it is, but kind of like this cutesy guys that are really attractive now.
Oh yeah, okay, yeah. Yes,
so that's quite changed too.
K-pop, just in terms of gender presentation and kind of, yes, impression. Mm-hmm. Yeah, is different. David, I saw you sit up when I asked the question about the industry, and I may be wrong, but it seems like you've been involved in some big productions. What have you seen? Has the industry changed at all in the time that you were in it?
You know, I was kind of on the wave of streaming services when that first started, so I've kind of got to witness that whole process from the inside. I kind of look at it like this. It's another part of that spectrum of, you know, the noise out there, like where it could be a good thing or it could be a toxic or bad thing. I think that there are more different things and choices out there, which is great. And you kind of get to choose what you're into. You know, I was always, I wouldn't say there was any kind of specific archetype that I was always being or always watching when I was younger. I always kind of went with stuff that would be, I guess, different or something. So I think there's more of that out there, which is really great for, you know, especially younger generation who maybe not on the like surface of, you know, just looking at, you know, superhero movies or, you know, big action movies. And there's other kind of avant-garde films out there that, you know, I think there's definitely more of that now with streaming. So that I believe is different. There's so much,
it's more path.
Yeah, there's more content out there for sure that you can choose from. So that's a good thing of the choices out there.
Yeah. Thank you. I didn't catch what Ian was wearing, but I just wanted to point at the fact that even though we're having this conversation, all four of us are sitting here wearing plain colored t-shirts none of us are none of us are decked out. I saw a meme yesterday that said trends are dead. Nobody has recognized that trends are dead, and now it's just about customizing our avatars. And that it was showing actual people, young people out on the street, and they completely looked like avatars. Like the everything from like turn of the century, 19th, 20th century fashion to absolute K-pop to the nth, to cosplay characters, to goth characters, and they're all in the same place at the same time, and that's just how they're living life, which seems very different to me than when I was growing up, certainly. But cool, yeah, there's more choice, which is good and bad. Ian, did you have something on that?
No, I was gonna say that's pretty cool to see that spectrum. Yeah. I mean, I'll just add a little nuance to what I said before, where I was just talking with another friend a couple of days ago, where if there's any trend per se, I think there is. There might actually be like I see some confusion sometimes between preference of style and like what is right or wrong.
Thank you.
Like, you know, I have a friend who is incredibly masculine and very loud, you know, and a lot of people mistake his actions or way of being to be wrong, right, or like abusing, which it's not. He's a really tender hearted guy on the inside. The way he presents is just very big, and that's totally cool, you know. But if he goes to South Korea and just is himself, he might get thrown some judgment, which I think that's something that we can all work on, of course, not judging a book by its cover. But the fact that the spectrum is stretching in one way and also overall widening, I think, is a very cool thing overall. Acceptance of different ways of being.
We're going to wind down toward the end here, but I do want to get one more question in, which, speaking to listeners out there, so you are all creative guys who have had some pretty cool accomplishments in at pretty young ages and gone through this kind of burnout cycle. When the times were dark, when you were in that burnout cycle, is there any perspective that you have now kind of coming through it where you would look back and say to somebody who's hitting that place, to the creative guy or creative person, creative woman who's hitting that place of, I just can't do this anymore, what do you have to offer somebody who's going into that dark night of the soul?
I always think about, when we're talking in general terms, like the simplest thing that you can do, because some people can afford to take off like a week or a month or a couple months. Like, that's what I did. I went on a road trip and spent a lot of time in nature and like learned how to meditate and journal and do these things that I still do to this day, but not everybody can do that. And I always think one of the most helpful things you can do is just start with focusing on your breath. Could be as simple as one breath, one inhale, one exhale, and developing a practice surrounding that and really getting more comfortable with the stillness over time and being able to identify the voice that is, as Ian mentioned earlier, it's your God, your higher self, your inner voice, whatever that is, and developing a relationship with that and really hear what that is trying to tell you. I think that's the source of wisdom as I understand it. And so I think for me, it's starting with the breath, developing a relationship to stillness, developing a relationship to pain. And as Ian mentioned too, just not judging it so hard. I think a lot of times the pain and the darkness just wants to be acknowledged as an equal part of who we are. You know, we're darkness and light. And a lot of times we just run away from the darkness, and that's what leaves us burned out. So that would be my suggestion.
Thank you. Well said. Other thoughts?
I think for me, and I wish, well, you know, people did say it to me as I was going through a lot of stuff, especially with work. It's easier said than done, but it's just to have patience. That, you know, going back to the social media thing, and you kind of put a lot of pressure on yourself and compare yourself to others. And sometimes you just gotta shut that off and just be really patient, you know, especially with whether that's, you know, in your career or, you know, your love life or whatever, just you don't sweat the small stuff and kind of keep moving forward. There is a light at the end of the tunnel. Nothing is permanent, especially if you don't want it to be. But yeah, just, I think patience now is something that we could all benefit from for sure.
Thank you. That was David. Ian, what do you think? What would you have wanted a wise elder to tell you?
You know, when I was deep in my depressed kind of dark moments, I genuinely felt that there might not be a way out of this. And I thought that I had made some tremendous mistakes. And I almost got to a point of just accepting life as a whole must be like this. Like, I'm just going to be climbing this uphill battle every day. So for people in that space, I think we've all been there. And I would just say it's, yeah. There's a good reason that those feelings are there. And a lot of the times, the more they're felt, the more they're asking to be acknowledged, as John said. And that requires a lot of courage, a lot of patience, a lot of stillness. And it really helps to have good people around you at that time, able to hold space that you can connect with, they can be vulnerable with. Doing it alone is very difficult. So I would encourage everything John and David said, as well as reaching out to folks, connecting with people. And I think each one of us has a very accurate internal compass, which is, I don't want to get new agey, but how it feels, if something feels lighter or someone feels more positive, I think it's good to follow those feelings. Trust in something a little bit outside of yourself, karma, your gut, God, whatever it is. I think there's got to be something outside of yourself, versus being locked in your head, which makes it very isolated and difficult.
Thank you. Yeah, and what I'll just notice from the outside here for listeners, for myself, for others, that kind of goes along with what you were just saying, is that when I find those spaces of stillness where I hear that voice and give it time and patience and effort, it's amazing the human beings who start coming into the picture. Like, it's not just a call that I hear. It's almost as if I'm creating a signal for that other people can hear and start showing up, right? And you three are kind of evidence of that, right?
Totally.
Amen.
Yeah, beautiful. So what's next, I guess, is a question, and where to find you. So in a kind of brief thing, if somebody wants to know more about you, John, mm-hmm. what's next and where do they find you?
They can find me. I think the best place is in the community, that the wellness community for filmmakers. It's called Variable. I'm active there, and it's a good place to get in touch. And what am I doing next? I am shooting a commercial next week in Chattanooga, Tennessee. There's a few commercial projects on the horizon, and that's and then outside of commercial projects, just kind of spinning wheels with these guys here about, which direction do we want to go next, and some cool opportunities and relationships are starting to pop up. So there's something bubbling. So not certain what it is yet, but we'll see.
Thank you. David, what's next and where can folks find you?
Can find me through my agent. No, I'm just kidding. you can connect to me through my email or, my Instagram. What is next? Continuing on this path with John and Ian and seeing what happens from that. I've got a few other potential projects I might be producing in either the fall or early next year, but there's not a whole lot I can do right now, especially with the strikes that are going on. So I'm kind of just weathering that storm and being patient.
And look for in the show notes, I'll put links to everybody's profiles and websites. And Ian, how about you? What's next and where can folks find you?
Yeah, people can find me Instagram, I suppose. Yeah, IEN the Korean, Ian the Korean on Instagram. And then as for what's next, I'm still on my sabbatical, and so I'm frolicking around the world traveling, but also I'm putting out into the universe that I'm going to make some meaningful feature length documentaries and narrative films. That's what I'm going to put out there. I don't know how it's going to happen, but it's going to happen.
Awesome. Ian Chi, John Bragel, David Bonnet, thank you for being here with me. Look for the link to the I Do film, the short film that started this connection, started this relationship down below. It's going to be launching big time in October. I'll post it out to all of our social media in the Mankind Project. Look for these three gentlemen. And yeah, give yourself a breath and some patience today. Thanks you all for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.
Yeah, that was awesome. You're natural, Boyson. You're natural.
This has been the Mankind Podcast, produced in association with the Mankind Project USA. And I personally want to thank our guests for joining us today and imparting their wisdom from their experiences in this amazing journey called life. Now, the fee for this episode is simple. If you found gold and insights that you believe could benefit your loved ones and those you care about, be sure to share it with them. And of course, remember that life doesn't happen to us. It happens for us, so long as we rip the pen out of fate's hand and become the author of our own story. So my friend, pick up the pen, and we'll see you next week. Lots of love.